Why did you pass that car ahead of us?
Because, darling, I don't want to go over the speed limit.
Oh, for goodness sakes, we'll never get to the lake at this rate.
Well, if you saw that traffic safety film in high school, you've been driving a long time. How well do you know the rules of the road? Do you think you could pass a written driver's ed test today? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 6 on this Friday, May the 30th. And we'll get a refresher course this hour on traffic laws following a story in the news the other day that says Wisconsin is no longer in the top 5 states when it comes to knowing the rules of the road. We slipped to number 12 in a national survey conducted by GMAC Insurance Company. We will welcome your traffic pet peeves during this hour and your questions on what's right and what's not while driving at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll also welcome your reactions. Are you surprised by this result from this insurance company? It also found out that 33 million licensed American drivers may be unfit for the roads, that they would fail this test if they took it today. Well, we had two guests scheduled for this hour. We have one of them with us. We can't find the other one at the moment, but we will. We'll keep trying, and we will welcome your traffic pet peeves and your questions for both of them. Presuming we can find both of them. We do have with us, and we are very happy to say so, Chris Stolpa. She is supervisor of the State Department of Transportation's Customer Service Center, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a he. I'm very sorry.
I know. The name throws people off all the time.
Yeah. And what I'm wondering is your reaction to this news that we're not in Wisconsin as sharp as we used to be when it came to knowing the rules of the road.
Yeah, I guess I was pretty surprised. I looked at the GMAC survey, and we fell from number 4 down to number 12. Although we're pretty close to the top 10, I mean, within just minor percentage points, it's still a drop from last year. So that kind of was surprising.
Yeah, we're still not too bad. You know, number 12 isn't...
We're better than Illinois, so...
It shows Kansas had the most educated drivers, New Jersey the worst, Minnesota was 5th best, Iowa 9th, Michigan 18th, and Illinois 32nd. Says that older drivers tended to score higher, as did male drivers. So... I guess, do you think that we have pretty good drivers in Wisconsin?
I think that the schools do a really good job with the younger drivers. What we've seen recently from the Department of Transportation was a lot of drivers that are 18, 19 coming in for their first road test, and without the benefit of driver education, they tend to make mistakes that driver ed kids don't. So that's what we've seen recently.
Oh, I see, because they didn't take a driver's ed class. They're just thinking, I'm old enough and I know how to do this.
Right. Once somebody turns 18, they're not required to have driver's ed. And so a lot of these young adults will come in, and because they're on their own or they're going to college, whatever, they didn't have the benefit of taking driver's ed in high school, or their parents, you know, didn't have the money to send them to driver's ed. They would try to wing it, if you will, or try to take it and learn from their friends who may or may not have built up some bad habits already.
Yeah, speaking of bad habits, what do you think are some of the worst habits on the road, people who are making poor choices?
I think that I went to the GMAC website when I was told about this interview, and I said I think they've covered the top 5 pretty well. What we've seen, and myself personally, the multitasking by drivers and trying to, you know, talk on the phone, work their Blackberries, eat, drink, you know, smoke, whatever they're doing. The task of driving tends to be put on the back burner, and other things are trying to get done in this fast-paced society that we live in.
I'm sure we'll get some calls on cell phone use, too. Do you think that's a problem with driving?
I think it's a huge problem, because if you look at it, where you're holding the phone is right up next to your face, so you lose one side of your driving picture. And unless you've got hands-free equipment, you are distracted by that. You can't see what's to the right or the left, depending on which hand you're holding the phone in, and it tends to leave things unguarded.
We are going to check our weather forecast, and it is a wet one for at least southern Wisconsin in particular. And then we'll continue talking with Chris Stolpa, who is supervisor of the State Department of Transportation's Customer Service Center. And we did locate our second guest, Bruce Hankey, who is a driving instructor for Zimmerman Driving School in Onalaska. And we'll continue talking about the rules of the road and how well we follow them, how well we know them. And also welcome your pet peeves. Is there something you notice other drivers doing that honks you off? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is.
And we are talking about the rules of the road this hour, as we react to a new survey that found Wisconsin drivers have dropped out of the top five states in terms of knowledgeable drivers. We're now number 12, but still not too bad. We don't know the rules of the road as well as we used to, but We're still doing okay. We are talking about driving safety and your pet peeves about other drivers. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have two guests with us this hour to help us out. Chris Stolpa, supervisor of the State Department of Transportation's Customer Service Center, and Bruce Hankey, driving instructor for Zimmerman Driving School in Onalaska. Good morning, Bruce Hankey.
Good morning.
And what about you? What's your reaction to this survey finding that Wisconsin drivers were not in the top five anymore, but were, I guess, still in the top 20?
Well, it doesn't actually surprise me much at all. I mean, just watching driving on a daily basis, it's obvious people either don't know the rules or just don't choose to follow them.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that, personally, I think a big part of it is enforcement. I think that the more we get away with things, the more we tend to do things and they become a habit as opposed to following the rules.
Yeah. Well, we were talking with Chris Stolpa just before the weather break, and one of the top driving mistakes that he agrees with that the insurance company listed was multitasking while driving. There are others on here. What do you think are some of the top driving mistakes?
The top driving mistakes?
Yes.
Well, I think that what you just mentioned is one of them. I have, for instance, students all the time tell me that they're good multitaskers, and what they don't realize is they are doing multiple tasks, but they are not good at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen people driving down the street. Actually, I saw a woman driving down the street with one leg in the window shaving it. A lot of people are not driving. They're doing other things, and driving is just one of the part of the package as opposed to their focus. So I'd say that is definitely one of the biggest things I've seen, is people just driving inattentively for many reasons. You know, we focus on cell phones, but people are doing so many other things, reading maps, talking to each other and looking at each other instead of looking at the road, you know, talking to the people behind them in the rearview mirror, you know.
Knock it off. That's the worst I've heard, shaving your legs while driving.
I hate to see what happens when the airbag goes off.
Oh, boy. Here's one pet peeve that just happened to me yesterday. And I know I do things too that are not correct. I understand that. But I was pulling up to a four-way stop. Somebody had already pulled up to the four-way stop ahead of me and had been there for, you know, I don't know, quite some time. And there was nobody else stopped. And I thought, what's this person waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, okay, they don't realize it's a four-way stop. And there was a car coming from the right. And then that car stopped for his stop sign, and everybody just sat there. And I'm like, I almost wanted to, you know, to beep the horn and say, come on, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know what to do at four-way stops, do we?
A lot of people do not know what to do at four-way stops.
Yeah,
Same thing is true with turning right on red. A lot of people think that means they can just go and turn.
Yeah. So what is the rule of the road when it comes to a four-way stop, Bruce?
It's whoever gets there first.
Mm-hmm.
Once you stop, Then you go. If it's your turn. If all four of you, very rarely would this ever happen, but if you all reach, if people are all reaching the stop sign at the same time, then the rule is the person to your right has the right of way. So anyone who doesn't have someone to his right would start the process, and then you would go in order. Whoever next doesn't have somebody to his right would go.
Right. Well, good. I had it right, but it didn't do me any good sitting by that car. Anyway, so Chris Stolpa, have you ever had to take out kids on driving tests?
Oh, yes. I've been at this job almost 25 years.
Yeah. And were kids before better than kids today, or about the same, or what?
I think teenagers are teenagers. I haven't seen a teenager yet that hasn't come in for a road test that hasn't been nervous. And I think the ones that scare examiners the most are the kids that come and say, I'm not nervous. look, kid, you're being tested. You better be nervous, because I am. Yeah. I enjoyed taking out the road test because you see such a difference in personalities and how people drive. And I think that taking out the 16-year-old is less challenging sometimes than taking out the 18 or 19, as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. 18, 19-year-olds, because there's where you see people really try to get creative.
Oh, no.
Driving on the sidewalk or backing up into other vehicles and things like that.
Do they think that they're just doing that because they don't know what they're doing, right?
Right. They haven't had the proper time behind the wheel, or they're being taught by somebody who's built up bad habits. So, we try to give them, if they take their first test and they don't do so well, we'll try to give them a 5-minute instruction period to say, these are the things you need to improve on, and if you really want to drive and be safe out here. That's, I think, that between the schools and the DMV, we are on the same page there. We both want to see safe drivers get their license.
Yeah. Well, we have full lines and emails coming in, and we have an email and a phone call on the same subject. So let me go to Mike in Middleton first. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I are from Pennsylvania. We've been in Wisconsin for 6 or 7 years now. We love it. We're starting to learn to like brats. And my pet peeve is Wisconsinites, for the most part, don't know the difference between a travel lane and a passing lane. In Pennsylvania, the right lane closest to the curb is the travel lane, and the passing lane is used just for passing, and unless the right lane is full to the point there's no room, then you can use the passing lane. In Pennsylvania, if you travel in the passing lane, you can get a ticket.
Really?
And out here, they just either don't care or don't know, or... But they love to travel in that passing lane when they shouldn't be.
We don't have any road hogs in Wisconsin.
Well, what it does is it creates a traffic hazard, because in Pennsylvania it's illegal to pass on the right. So if somebody's in the passing lane and you pass on the right, then you can get a ticket, besides it being hazardous in its own way.
Do we, I guess Bruce first, do we have a law about traveling or in the passing lane?
It's not a law, mm-hmm. per se. It's one of those things that it used to be very common courtesy, like many of the rules of the road that aren't specifically laws, but the expectation is that you pass on the left-hand lane. And I would agree with the caller. I mean, there's a lot of people here who don't understand that, and they can especially create traffic hazards, because you'll get somebody in a 45 doing 40 with a person next to them doing 42, and now you've got people who want to do 45 who begin tailgating, and, you create road rage type of situations, and that doesn't mean the tailgater road rage person is correct either. It's just you have a snowball effect of bad behavior.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I'm gonna plead guilty. I have done this. I found myself doing this thing. Oh, wait a minute. I better get it back over into the right lane, because you kind of zone out sometimes, don't you?
Right. We do have a road, what they called the road hog law, went into effect probably 12 years ago, rarely enforced. So I, too, agree with the driver. I've driven in Pennsylvania, a lot of eastern states, that they have lots of signage that say stay in the right lane unless to pass. And it's been kind of a forgotten ideal here in Wisconsin, that if you're driving and not passing somebody, you should remain in the right lane.
Yeah.
So the driver, I could say I would hope that Wisconsin had better drivers than that, but and I think for the most part our drivers try to follow the rules. It's just we've got so many of them that some of those tend to get forgotten. And I see an open lane, I'm just as guilty as anybody else. Hey, that lane's open, and mm-hmm. I want to go.
Yeah. Or you get tired of having to merge over to the left lane on a highway because of traffic merging into the right lane, and sometimes you just stay there.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the reminder, Mike. We appreciate the call. Next, we go to Jason in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Given that people are cycling more to conserve fuel, what's the proper way for drivers to drive with bicyclists around? And I guess on the other side of that, do bicycles follow the same rule as automobiles?
Yeah, good question. So do you have a specific example, maybe, Jason, in terms of how a car should interact with the bike?
Oh, I guess just, for example, riding along a street without a bike lane, a cyclist is in the same, say it's a just a two-lane road.
Yeah. How much leeway or should you give a bicyclist, Bruce?
Well, the law says that you have to give them 3 feet as far as your leeway, which doesn't hardly seem adequate. But they have the same rights to the road as we do. As a matter of fact, many bicyclists are surprised when they get tickets for going through stop signs or whatever, not realizing that they are supposed to be following the same rules. So when you're on the road with a bicyclist, if you're a bicyclist, it's common courtesy to stay over to the side of the road so cars can get past you. But they have the same rights to be out there on the street as we do.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Chris?
Nope, I agree with that entirely. They're given a full lane if they need to make left turns or maneuver their vehicle just like any other vehicle. I think the key comes into this whole topic is drivers, all drivers, regardless of what you're on or in, need to just pay attention to all other drivers.
Yeah, and I know one of the pet peeves drivers have about bicyclists is that they might ride three or four abreast across a road. Is that okay? You know
as
what I mean?
As far as legally?
Yeah, is that because they're able to do that because they have the same rights as a vehicle?
Well, they are able. It's not wise.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, they should follow the same rules. If I were to quote anything, it'd be like the motorcycle handbook, which shows using a staggered formation rather than everybody riding, you know, side by side.
Right, right. Mary Beth in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi. I think if they have the same right to be on the road, bicyclists, and I think that's great, then they ought to be licensed as well so that we know that they've been properly trained.
All right. That wasn't your comment, though, right? Hold on, Mary Beth, because we have news from National Public Radio coming up anyway and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will take more of your questions about safe driving and the rules of the road. We'll also welcome any pet peeves you might have about other drivers. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'll be back after the news.
Oh, hurry up. You can beat that red light.
Maybe. But maybe somebody else on the side street is trying to beat it, too.
That's a clip from a driver's safety film from 1964 reminding us not to blow through red lights. But what should you do if a light turns yellow just as you are entering the intersection? You're there and the light turns yellow. Do you slam on your brakes? Do you speed up? Or do you just proceed with caution? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 6:36 on this Friday, May the 30th, and we are talking about the rules of the road this hour, in part because we've had a couple of listener requests to do a program like this to remind us all about the rules of the road. And a survey recently came out by an insurance company, GMAC Insurance, and it released this survey that found that 33 million licensed American drivers may be unfit for the roads, that they would fail the written driver's test if they took it today. And it also found that Wisconsin drivers have dropped out of the top five states in terms of knowledgeable drivers. The last time they did this test, Wisconsin was number four. This year, number 12. So we welcome your questions about the rules of the road. We welcome your pet peeves, your traffic pet peeves. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. We have two guest experts with us to help us out. Chris Stolpa is supervisor of the State Department of Transportation's Customer Service Center. And Bruce Hanke is driving instructor for Zimmerman Driving School in Onalaska. And Chris, what about that question that I just posed? I'm driving along, and the stoplight, the traffic signal turns yellow just as I'm just approached the intersection. I haven't gone through it yet, but I'm right there. What should I do?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's like a point of no return when you're at an intersection. If I'm in the intersection, the light turns yellow, I should complete my turn as soon as, you know, practical.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm approaching that light and it turns and I have the ability to make a good stop, I need to stop because the next thing that's coming up is the solid red. So
mm-hmm.
It depends, I guess, if I can make a good, safe stop, I should make that stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's what yellow means. I'm preparing to stop.
Anything to add, Bruce?
Well, just that, many people around here, they think yellow means speed up to make the light, just like your little clip from the 50s or whatever it was said, you know, and that does create a major hazard.
Yeah.
People who do have time to stop instead are speeding up instead of slowing down. So.
Yeah. Now,
yeah, even NASCAR changed the rule. Once you hit the yellow, you don't have to race back to the checkered flag.
Now, Mary Beth in Eau Claire is back with us to ask her question about driving.
Okay, and I just have to just reiterate what you just said about going through yellow. In Europe, the green flashes before it turns yellow.
Okay.
I've seen a few of those across the country, yes.
Okay,
and
I think that's
kind of nice to have.
I think that's a great idea because the yellow sometimes is so short, and they're not the same at every intersection. But my question is about roundabouts. They can save fuel costs, and you spoke about stopping at a four-way stop.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing where to go. Well, people who get into a roundabout don't know where to go.
Yeah.
And I'm real concerned about, they just put one in on 53, Highway 53 here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a hard time just in the city with the one roundabout there. It's incredible. People don't signal. They don't indicate that they're exiting, so no one knows what's going on.
Yeah, I guess they're still kind of new for us, aren't they, Chris?
Yes, they are. Yeah. We've had our office in Green Bay is right across from highways, and we constantly ask them for pamphlets because that's probably one of our bigger questions right now. There's a frenzy of highway construction and city construction to put roundabouts in, and I understand the caller's concern. I think give it time, and people will adjust to these. They are fantastic once you get used to how they work, and they do save a lot of fuel, they do save a lot of time, and they also take away some of the confusion. So once people get used to them, I need to clarify that. It does take a little bit of time to get used to having that roundabout, and once you're used to it, you know, it'll be like, wow, how do we ever get by without these things?
Yeah, so Bruce, how do you teach your students about roundabouts?
Well, the rules depend on a little bit on whether there's more than one lane in the roundabout, but some things that are always true is the person in the roundabout has the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're entering, you're always going to be going to the right and following the roundabout counterclockwise. If there are two lanes, once you're on the roundabout, you move into the center lane to go around it. If there's just one lane, you have to give the right of way to the people who are already on it. Well, either way, you give the right of way to people already on it, but you merge into traffic and then merge out as you would on an expressway entrance and exit ramp on the expressway. One of the things I think people often don't realize is, just as they don't realize it with the expressway, is that the person already on it has the right of way.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Mary Beth, for the call. Next, we go to Wayne in Green Bay. Hi, Wayne.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
My question is, when the speed limit is posted at 65, how fast can you go in the passing lane?
65.
65.
Exactly, 65.
Well, then, how is it that people go 80, 90? They think that's the speedway, not the passing lane.
Well, what people actually do and what people are legally abided to do are two different things sometimes. And I agree with you. I live here in Green Bay, so I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. And it's I think people are watching too much NASCAR out here.
Yeah. Well, I think, I'm going to plead guilty. A lot of people do, they'll go 5 miles over the speed limit often, but it's not the law. Often the police don't nail you for going a couple miles over the speed limit. Isn't that right, Bruce?
Well, see, and that's one of those enforcement things I was talking about earlier, too. We have one of the problems I have with teaching students. Is they will argue with me. No, I can go 5 miles and over the line. You know, their parents tell them, go 5 miles over the limit, you know.
Right.
And I'm trying to convince them, no, you can't. And I have a hard time contradicting their parents or telling them something completely different.
What about that flow of traffic argument that, hey, I'm only speeding because everybody else is?
Well, that doesn't count for speeding. And one of the things people confuse is they say you go with the flow of traffic. The idea there is the basic speed law that, for instance, if it's snowing, if it's congested, et cetera, just because it is 55 doesn't mean I have the right to do 55. In a snowy situation, in a 55-mile-hour speed limit, the safe speed might actually be 35, and you could get a ticket for doing 55. The idea is to flow with traffic at a safe and reasonable speed, not to exceed the speed limit because everybody's going 85 miles an hour.
Yeah. Joan in Shorewood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My pet peeve is... when I am a passenger in someone else's car and the driver is distracted and participating in a very animated conversation and takes not just one hand but both hands off the wheel to make some very elaborate hand gestures describing, you know, the shape of their computer, describing the hand gestures of their grandchildren when they're playing basketball on the basketball
team. Oh, no.
I mean, and I did drive with one professional driver, and I was paying a lot for this van driver to drive me safely someplace, took both hands off the wheel and was talking, and when I objected and asked her to please keep both hands on the wheel, she became angry and said, I always talk with my hands.
Yeah.
And so that's my tip.
So are we still supposed to have the hands on the wheel at the, 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock positions, Chris?
Well, that's the old methodology. I think now there's new discussions on hand position, and Bruce might back me up with the airbags. Is that they look at either 9 and 3 or as long as you have two hands on or near the wheels, what we look for.
Is it okay if I have both of them at 6 o'clock?
That's not entirely wise, but. I mean, if you're getting ready to turn, you might have to move your hands to, you know, where they'd be close to each other. But resting them on the wheel is not a recommended method.
All right. Point taken. Bruce, anything else on hands on the wheel?
Well, just as Chris was saying, the airbags, people don't realize nowadays, and that's another thing that parents often tell their kids, with your hands at 10 and 2, when your airbag deploys, it can actually snap your wrist, break your thumbs, break your forearms, not to mention that flying limb is going to hit you in the face.
Yikes.
And that's why they have switched it to 9 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention at 9 and 3, you also have the maneuverability that if you put your hands on the wheel at 10 and 2 and you start to turn the wheel not moving your hands, you'll see you can't turn that wheel anywhere near as far as you can with the wheel at 9 and 3. And as you were talking about with your hand underneath, for instance, I have many students who follow their parents on putting their hand inside the wheel with their fingers facing toward them, which is... something that they do often make on left-hand turns. Well, if you have to make a quick correction and turn to the right, your arm doesn't go that way. So now you've placed yourself in a position where you have to take your hand out of the wheel, regrip the wheel, and turn, and you've just lost seconds where you might be traveling, you know, 30, 40, 60 feet, depending how fast you're going. You know, you're traveling in that time it takes you to move your hand.
Well, I'm learning a lot this hour. I hope you are, too, and we welcome more of your questions about the rules of the road and traffic safety and proper driving techniques. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking about the rules of the road because a recent survey found Wisconsin drivers don't know the rules of the road as well as we used to. We're still 12th best in the nation, according to this survey. But we can be better, right? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Friday, May the 30th, coming up in our next hour after 7 o'clock. What's the latest scoop from the land of public television? We will go straight to the top to find out. The president and CEO of PBS is in Wisconsin today, and she will be here in our next hour to hear from you and to answer your questions. Right now, we're answering your questions about the rules of the road. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Getting a refresher course this hour on traffic laws and traffic safety. And Krista in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Krista.
Good morning.
Morning.
My pet peeves are tailgaters. Anybody who's closer than 2 seconds behind me, especially when I'm on the motorcycle. Tailgating a motorcycle is very, very dangerous. And I've tried, either a car or a motorcycle, I've tried, slowing down, I've tried just tapping the brake to get their attention. On the motorcycle, I can motion, the hand motion where you're saying slow. I've tried that and kind of pushing them. What's the best way to do this?
So how do you deal with a tailgater? Chris?
Oh, I agree with Chris. I'm a longtime motorcycle rider, and I always call the motorcycle the Rodney Dangerfield of the traffic world because it gets no respect. It's unfortunate that in today's world, with the number of motorcyclists out there, which has really kind of doubled in the last few years, we get a lot of requests for motorcycle tests and people coming in to get their endorsements, and it's people just need to pay more attention to them. The cycle only has the two wheels. It's got, it's smaller in traffic and cars. You have to back away from them, give them some room. You actually, by the rules of the road, should give a motorcyclist more room than you would a car, only because if that motorcycle falls, you need to be able to have the ability to avoid them. And I agree with Krista 100% that my hand gesture may be a lot different than hers, and maybe I'll go get about 100 of my favorite cyclist friends and talk to that individual. I don't know. It's unfortunate. Car drivers, whoever's listening out there, please give motorcycles a lot more room. They really need it.
What is that 2 second rule all about, Bruce?
Well, I didn't hear the questioner talking about the 2 second rule, but many people, and even some of the old DMV literature says the 3 second rule.
Mm-hmm.
But in actuality, a car needs 3 seconds to come to a complete stop as a general rule. And they've actually extended that to 4 seconds now that we're teaching, because you don't understand that the car is stopping until you see those brake lights come on, which means he's already started his process. So you have even less time to react than he did. So that's why we say 4 second rule. And the 4 second rule is basically, say that car passes a speed limit sign. From the moment the car in front of me passes that speed limit sign, I start counting 1001, 1002, and I should not get to that sign that the car passed before 4 seconds is up. The reason they went to the seconds instead of, it used to be a car length for every mile. Well, people have different length cars, and people can't really judge distance a lot of times. If you're out on the expressway, 4 seconds is going to be a much greater distance than if you're driving in traffic doing 25 miles an hour, so you will actually pace yourself more. The faster you're going, you'll give yourself more distance. So the 4 second rule works pretty well with motorcycles. As Chris was saying, not only just falling over, but motorcycles can stop more quickly than we can, which means we have even less time to react than they do. So we would normally give them more like 6 seconds in following a motorcycle. And people don't give them anywhere near as much room as they should, just a general rule.
Next, we go to Joe in Menasha. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I would like to know, we have a rule that when we pull up to an intersection, it's a red light, we can turn right if it's safe to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, what if it's less than a 90-degree angle? What if it's like 45 degrees or something like that? Can I still turn?
Do you understand that, Chris?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. There are some kind of offset intersections. I think where our caller's calling from in Menasha area, railroad tracks and things like that tend to mess up the road system. And it's still a right turn. If you're going from one street to another street, you stop for your red light. If it's clear, you can still turn right. It's still considered a right turn. And you can do that on red after you've made your stop and things are clear.
Yeah, here's an email for you, Bruce, a listener in La Crosse, Mary in La Crosse, who says, La Crosse has quite a few unmarked intersections in the downtown area and surrounding neighborhoods. These roads are frequently traveled by motorists, but there are no yield signs or stop signs. Some people just blow right through these, feeling they have the right of way. She's from New York. She's never seen non-marked intersections like this. What's up with that?
Well, generally speaking, in the interest of, you know, keeping traffic flowing, the uncontrolled intersections are there because they're less traveled areas and slower speeds, you know, the 25-mile-hour speeds in the residential areas is where you're going to get those. The problem is people are supposed to approach, the proper way to approach an uncontrolled intersection is to take your foot off the gas and cover the brake and be looking left and right. Now, generally, if I'm coming there significantly before you and I can pass through the intersection without it being a problem, then I would just keep going. If we're both approaching it, then we treat it like a stop sign, a four-way stop. You know, we'd get there and stop, and the person on the right would have the right to go first, et cetera. But I would agree there's a lot of people who simply, if they figure if it's not controlled, they just drive. And especially when you have shrubbery or parked cars or other things blocking your view, that's not a wise choice. You really want to approach them. I tell my students, approach them pretty much the same way you would a yield sign. You don't have to yield in terms of the right-of-way, but you certainly don't want to get T-boned either. So as you're approaching them, if you can't see, you should slow down enough that you could react if you had to.
Yeah. Here's one that I need an answer to. It's another one of my pet peeves. If I I'm in a lighted intersection, and I'm the first car, and I want to make a left-hand turn, and I have a green light, and I want to make a left-hand turn, and there are cars, though, approaching and passing through the intersection coming from the other direction. Am I supposed to, should I, pull into the intersection so I can make that left right away when that traffic clears? Or should I stay back at the light and not proceed into the intersection?
Are you asking me or Chris?
Bruce.
Okay. Well, you should not, as a matter of fact, on the DMV test, if you enter on a yellow light, you're going to lose points for that.
No,
you should
not
enter on the yellow light. But
I'm stopped
if you're already
yeah.
at the green light mm-hmm. and traffic's coming and you want to make that left-hand turn, what I tell my students, when you're sitting out in the intersection, you're basically a target. So if you have a high traffic situation where you're not going to be able to make a left-hand turn unless you pull out, mm-hmm. look for any gaps, look for any openings. If those openings are not coming, then when you get to the point where the light is probably about to turn yellow, that is a time that you can proceed out there so that as it turns yellow and cars clear the intersection, you can make your left-hand turn. But you're in a situation that if you are sitting out in the intersection, you have to be aware that not only are you blocking the view of the person across from you who's also trying to turn left very often, but like I said, you're pretty much making yourself a target. You're more vulnerable out there. But yes, you can pull out into the intersection and wait for the path to clear and then go ahead.
You can do that, but you want to be careful is what you're saying. Okay.
You want to be very careful.
Okay. So I guess, Chris, I've been doing it wrong. I always pull out. I want to pull out because I don't want to, you know, once the traffic clears, you end up, you know, it seems like more than one car can make that left-hand turn, but only one can make that left-hand turn if the person stays back.
Right. So it depends on the situation, like Bruce said. If you got a ton of cars coming the other way, you might not even want to risk going past that that stop line. But in general, if you're in a green light situation, you can pull into that intersection and wait for your turn, clear the intersection, and if you're in there when the light turns yellow, you still want to complete your turn as soon as practical.
Well, here's one I haven't heard of before. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
It's me.
Yes, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. Two concerns. I don't know if we have time, but one is quite often here, I live in a northern suburb, and the parent is preceding their child, maybe the child's 5 or 10 feet in back of the parent, mother or father, and they'll blow right through the stop sign, and I see the child, and they're checking and making sure that it's safe, but I don't see the child looking to the left or right, so my impression is they're not teaching the child what to do at an intersection.
You're talking about pedestrians, not right?
Well, no, the bicyclists.
Oh,
they're both
yeah.
on bicycles, and the child is not being taught to look through what to do at an intersection, whether it's a controlled or uncontrolled intersection.
Okay. Any comment on that briefly, Bruce?
I couldn't hear the question, so I'll leave that one to Chris.
I'm not sure. It was more parents and kids on bicycles. I'd really rather not go there.
Right. I think that the key is whether you're walking across the street or driving, you should always look both ways before crossing the street.
Right.
I was taught that when I was three, so I lived out in the country. So it's just like same thing. I agree with the caller that parents should be teaching their children to look both ways before crossing the street, whether they're walking or riding.
Yeah, in terms of pedestrians and motorists, the motorist should yield to the pedestrian always, Bruce?
Yeah, if the pedestrian's stepping in the street, obviously you don't want to run them over. I mean, a lot of people don't even yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk, but if a pedestrian has stepped in the crosswalk and started to cross the street, we're supposed to stop and let the pedestrian cross. You often see pedestrians kind of dodging for life back onto the curb because the motorists don't allow them to cross like they're supposed to.
Well, we have tons of callers that we're leaving online because this is a very popular topic. Thanks to both of you. We really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Chris Stolpa, supervisor of the State Department of Transportation's Customer Service Center, and Bruce Hankey, driving instructor for Zimmerman Driving School in Onalaska. We thank the listeners who suggested we do a program like this, and we thank you for all of your calls and your pet peeves. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.